Merry Christmas, everyone. Great to see you. We're glad you're here. I want to welcome Northmont, who is joining us, and Springboro, who is joining us. And I don't know if you know or not, but we have a second classic service that's joining us right now. And so it's great to have classics with us as well. I got an email this week from a lady who was attending Fairhaven for a number of years, and she moved to Saipan. Anybody know where that is? It's a small island just east of the Philippines, and she's serving at a school there. And she sent me an email this week, and she says, I'm so grateful that you put the messages online, and just want you to know I'm still with you at Fairhaven all the way over there, as there's not many churches there in Saipan, and so she's joining us. So I thought, what would it be like if we were just to say Merry Christmas by applause to Emily, who's joining us all the way in Saipan, right? Merry Christmas, Emily. Awesome. So welcome to week two of Intentional Christmas, where we're looking at the Christmas story, but we're looking at it from different angles, because here's what Christmas is really all about. Christmas is about Jesus intentionally pursuing you. So in this series, we're talking about how you and I can intentionally pursue Jesus. We're looking at the story of Christmas, and we're kind of unpacking it in a very different way and looking at ways that Isaiah describes Jesus, and we're asking ourselves the question, how can then we be intentional? Because it's so easy for Christmas to come, and we celebrate Christmas, we put up our lights, and we go to parties, and we have cookies and all kinds of presents and gifts and all that, and we celebrate Christmas well, but the reality is it possible for you and I to have an intentional Christmas? In other words, to think through really what Christmas is all about, and to be intentional about a few things in our lives. I'm suggesting four, actually. We talked last week about one, but before I talk about that, if you have a Bible, why don't you turn with me to Isaiah chapter 9, which is where we bookmarked last week. We're reading the same verse 4 weeks in a row because Isaiah describes, he prophesies Jesus and how Jesus is going to come, and he describes Jesus by four different kinds of phrases, and it's these phrases that we're looking at, and we're talking about how we then can look at these phrases and ask, how then can you and I be intentional about Christmas? So here's what Isaiah writes in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called four things. I want you to say them with me. Here we go, all together in all of our campuses. Emily, join us, all of us together. Here we go, four things. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace. And we're looking at each one of these four descriptions. And from these descriptions as to what they mean, we're trying to live out an intentional Christmas. Last week we started with Wonderful Counselor, and Jesus is described as our Wonderful Counselor, the one who gives us advice and guidance and leads us. And we also said that being a counselor means that you're others-focused. Is it fair to say that God is others-focused? Right? If you're here for the very first time, I've got great news for you. At any one of our campuses, here's the great news, that God is so focused on you that that's exactly why he sent his one and only son. He is others-focused. We actually took that a step further and said, what would it be like if we were intentional in being kind? Because kindness is others-focused. And yet, once again, if you were here last week, we saw a video. Children are teaching us so much, right? Kindness is powerful. It's a game changer. And so we talked about that last week. Well, Isaiah goes on, and he says that Jesus is the mighty God. Wow. See, if we're going to have a Christmas that's like no other, it might mean that if Jesus is our mighty God, that we're going to have some intentional living. And we're going to talk about how we can be intentional in our living. In fact, we're going to take it a step further and say we want to be intentional in reshaping our lives. That Christmas is a time where we don't just celebrate, we actually evaluate our lives. And maybe we ought to reshape a few things in our lives. I'm going to suggest two of them from a Christmas story that we're going to read that is so familiar to you that at first glance when we read it, you're like, I've already heard this story. And you have. But the reality is when we open up the hood and we take a second look at it in terms of being very intentional of the way we live because Jesus is the mighty God, and we reshape a few things in our lives, there's some small changes, maybe big changes that we could make that would cause our Christmas to be so different, and in fact, it might even impact our brand new year that's coming really around the corner, 2017. And so that's what we're going to do today, because we often have intentional values with accidental living. Have you noticed that? Many of us can articulate that we have a value about God, or we have a value about Jesus, or we value church, we value our friendships. If you're married, you might value your marriage, or you value your kids. But the reality is, when you look at your life, what happens is we have all these intentional values, but we couple that with accidental living. In other words, it really doesn't change the way we live. We just sort of go on through life, and we hope that accidentally things will happen. And as we think through this Christmas season, it might be that we ought to be very intentional in reshaping a few things in our life. Because Jesus is the mighty God, it might be important for us to reshape a few things in our lives. So let's go to the Christmas story, and let me read it for you, and then we'll unpack it, as I said, and we'll take a look at two ways that you can reshape your life and be very intentional about living this Christmas season in maybe a different way. So while you've been in Isaiah chapter 9, you have a bookmark there. Let's go to the right, and let's go to the New Testament, and we're going to go to Matthew chapter 2. Last week, we were in Matthew chapter 1. So Matthew's the first book in the New Testament. It's pretty simple. It's pretty easy. Matthew chapter 2, we're going to start reading in verse 1, and we're going to read all the way through verse 12. So you got to have it open. There's lots of details in this story that I'm going to look at from a very different perspective with you. You know the story. It's about the Magi, the wise men. And oftentimes we think of them as how many wise men? Three. The reality is that if you read historical documents and just read the story carefully, there are probably many, many more than three, although we have three in our nativity scene because of the three gifts that they brought, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But the reality is, in history, there are probably many, many more than that. And the reality is, even in our nativity scene, we have the three wise men in our nativity scene. Kathy and I collect nativity scenes from all over the world, and we love to put them up. And we put the three wise men in the nativity scene, and they really don't belong there. I mean, the true Christmas story, they don't belong there, and we'll read it today. You probably haven't seen it before. Maybe you have, I don't know, but you'll see it today in Matthew chapter 2, that the wise men came, the Magi came, probably as much as a year later. Because you'll notice in the story that they didn't go to the manger, they actually went to the house of Joseph and Mary. And so they came way later in the process. So not to mess with your nativity scene, but it's important that we know this. So throw out the three wise men and add them next year, all right? So here we go, Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. Here we go. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, magi, or wise men, if you want to write in your Bibles, kingmakers, that's where we get the name kingmakers, magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We have seen his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." You might want to underline that. To worship him. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, because there was probably a very large entourage. They came in with all kinds of people, and there probably were servants, there probably were animals, there probably was, you know, from their journey, they had backpacks and all kinds of stuff, you know. They had U-Hauls that followed them, and so they came in, and when Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and the reality is all Jerusalem with him. Verse 4, when he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, we'll come back to that, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. And they knew right off the bat. They quoted Micah chapter 5, verses 2 and 4. Here's what it says, verse 5. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet wrote, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler.'" Isaiah says it's a what? Mighty God. "Out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi, the wise men, secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child, and as soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." We know the story, and so it's easy to read sarcasm in this. I don't think there was sarcasm at the time. He probably, in his heart, was so disturbed about this, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Verse 9, "After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen, when it rose, went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the, what does it say there in your Bibles? On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Now, if you know the Gospels, that's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you know that Matthew is the only one that records the story of the wise men or the magi. And I guess initially we could ask, well, why would Matthew include this story? Because it seems a little random at some level, although there's a lot of drama in it, because if you drop down to verse 16 and 18, you see that, you know, baby boys were being killed as a result of this news that came into Jerusalem. No other gospel records this, and yet this story has the intentionality of God all over it. And so as we read this story, it ought to do something to us to want to be intentional in the way we live and maybe reshape some things that we're thinking about in our lives. I'm going to mention two of them, as I mentioned. So here's the first one. You can jot this down if you want, because I'm asking you to do the same thing I'm doing, and then I'm thinking about how I can reshape my life around these two things. The first one is not so difficult. The second one is the more difficult one. So let me give you the first one. Let's be intentional in reshaping our perspective of who is number one. That's what Christmas is all about, really. To think through the idea that God sent his Son, who is the mighty God in our lives, and we get to wrestle with the question, who is number one? Because when you go through the year, what happens in your life is the same thing that happens in my life. It's very easy for me to become number one in my life. Anybody else have the same problem, right? Willing to admit that? It's very easy. And so we're going to ask the question, how can we reshape our perspective of who is number one? We often hear things like, you got to look out for number one, right? Ever hear that before? I mean, you got to look out for number one. And I would actually say that that's a true statement. You do need to look out for number one. The more important question is, who is number one, right? And what we find in this story is that there are three main characters. And what's interesting, most interesting to me, is that as you look at these three main characters, they have a different perspective on who number one is. So let's walk through the story, and I'll show you. The first is Herod. And who is number one in Herod's life? Herod. I mean, Herod was half Jew and 100% about himself. I mean, he actually called himself the king of the Jews. Herod was actually hostile towards Jesus. So we know who in Herod's life was number one. Herod was number one in his life, and so Jesus was a threat to him. And I would say to you here, if you're attending because somebody promised you lunch or in any one of our campuses, and you have no interest in really what is happening at the Christmas story, or you have no interest in Jesus, here's what I know about you, because I was there at one time, and that is that you're number one, and there's no reason for you to think about anything else because you're number one, and so just call it for what it is. You're number one. And Herod, he was number one in his life. He was a tyrant. He was a paranoid tyrant. I mean, there's all kinds of details in history about Herod. And you probably heard some of these statistics in history, facts about Herod. Herod killed three of his own sons. Some of you probably know that. Scholars tell us that Herod actually killed his favorite wife. When I read that in some historical document, I thought, well, that's an oxymoron. Actually, I would just say he's a moron. I mean, he killed his favorite wife, it says right, you know, in history. I mean, Caesar Augustus said of Herod, I would rather be Herod's pig than his son. I mean, clearly, in Herod's life, he was number one, and he was hostile towards it, and that's why we read later on in the story that he wanted to kill every little boy 2 years and under because of the fact that these magi showed up, you know, maybe a year after Jesus was born, and he wanted to make sure that he got all of them, and so that's why Mary and Joseph fled. You know the story. They fled to Egypt because Herod was threatened by this, and Herod was hostile towards Jesus, and my guess is that there's some that will go through the Christmas season, and you know what? Jesus will be threatening to them. They'll go through the season, and they'll celebrate it, and they'll put up lights, and they'll have presents under the tree, but the reality is number one is themselves, just like Herod. Well, there's another character in the story, and that's the religious leaders. I read it for you. It's the chief priests and teachers of the law. This is really interesting. Watch this. They were people who had all the information. I mean, these were the ones that knew the historical documents. These are the ones that knew the prophecy. They got before Herod, and they didn't even have to think about it. I mean, they quoted right off the bat from Micah chapter 5. They knew the prophet Micah. They knew what he had to say. And so right off the bat, they even named the place that Jesus is going to be born. Bethlehem, they said. They had all the information. And yet the religious ones were indifferent. It made no difference in their life. It made no change in their life. They weren't rushing to the house. It was the wise men that were rushing. They knew about it. They were just called in by Herod. And man, if you didn't come when Herod called, it's going to be a bad day for you, right? And so they came in and they knew exactly. See, right information doesn't mean that it's going to change your response. Right information in your life doesn't mean that you'll reshape your life around it. Not too long ago, I was in the grocery store, and I was waiting to pay for a couple of items that, you know, that I was getting for the family on the way home, and I was standing in line, and there was a guy in front of me, and he was buying a few things, but then he was buying this big pack of cigarettes like this, and the clerk on the other side, I'm hoping that she knew him, I don't know, but this is what she said. She looked at him and said, "Have you ever read the side of the box?" I thought, wow. So I had never really fully read what was on the side of the box. So I asked the person behind me, I said, "Do you mind if I just come be right back?" And so I went over and I grabbed a cigarette box and I walked over there and I was hoping that nobody saw me with it. And so I was holding the cigarette box and I looked at the side of it and it says right on the side, "It's going to kill you." It says right on the side. Obviously, information doesn't necessarily change people in their lives. And it's exactly what happened here. These religious leaders, they were indifferent. I mean, they had all the right information, but it didn't change anything in their life. You see, it is possible for us to be very religious. It is possible for us to have perfect attendance on a Sunday. It is possible for us to own a Bible even and to attend a class, a women's Bible study or BSF or a men's Bible study early in the morning when they come together and have donuts and devotions and it's awesome. And you can believe that what Jesus says is true. You can believe that the Christmas story is true. You can even believe that Jesus is the mighty God and make no difference in the way you live your life. Indifference. You know, there's going to be a lot of people that go through a Christmas season again. And they're going to celebrate Christmas, and they're just going to be indifferent. It's going to make absolutely no difference in their life. They're just going to continue on with their life. You've heard me say this a million times here at Fairhaven, but I'm going to say it again. Information doesn't equal transformation. Just because you know something doesn't mean it's going to change the way you live your life. Just because you know something doesn't mean you're going to reshape your perspective in your life. We've said this, information plus application or making your life work around it or changing your life, information plus application equals transformation. In this story, I guess you could put it this way, information plus worship equals transformation. The religious leaders, they were just completely indifferent. And I wonder how many people will go through. I want to make sure that in my life, I don't go through another Christmas and just be indifferent about it. I want to make sure that I'm intentional, that I stop this Christmas and intentionally ask myself a shaping question about the perspective I might have. Who is number one in my life? Who is number one in your life? That's a really important question. Because the second thing that we look at impacts that. Well, there's a third party to this story, a third group of people, and that's, of course, the wise men. And the wise men were the worshipers. I mean, the moment they discovered this new king, the moment they discovered it, they came to worship. I mean, keep in mind, they were the kingmakers. They came to establish a new kingdom. That's what the wise men were to do. That's what the wise men were supposed to do. They were supposed to come in, and they were supposed to acknowledge a king, and they were supposed to establish a new kingdom. That was their job. But you know the story. The story in Matthew chapter 2 actually goes back 600 years. I don't know if you know that or not. The reason why Matthew included the story of the wise men is because of what happened 600 years earlier. Let me show it to you because it's absolutely amazing. When you put these two together, all of a sudden you begin to realize, wow, God is so intentional that he had this plan 600, 700 years before Jesus, you know, beyond eternity, he had this plan in his mind. Intentionality is written all over this. So here's what I want you to do. Stay in Matthew, all right? And I want you to hang a left again. Go back to the Old Testament, and let's go to Daniel. You might need to use the table of contents if you don't have an electronic device. Go to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel is a story about a guy named Daniel, thus the name. And Daniel was a young man who was brought from Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar was the king. He was the king of Babylon. He was establishing the Babylon kingdom. And what he did is he went into Jerusalem. He destroyed Jerusalem. He destroyed the temple. And he took some of the people and brought them to Babylon. He took the smartest, the youngest, the brightest. And Daniel was this smart, handsome young man, probably in his late teens. And Nebuchadnezzar brought him to this kingdom, and then he had to go back to school. He learned a language, he learned the customs, he learned the religion, and yet was still able to maintain his faith in God, in the mighty God. And so Daniel, we know him as a man of what? Man of prayer. So in Daniel chapter 2, what happens is the king has this dream, and the dream is so disturbing that Nebuchadnezzar thinks, oh man, I gotta get some, you know, somebody to interpret this. I gotta figure out what the story really is. I gotta figure out if this dream has anything to do with my life and if it's real. And so he calls all the wise men in. He calls the magi or the magicians, that's how we get the word magi. He calls them in and he says, hey, I've had this dream and I want you to interpret it for me. In Daniel chapter 2. And they said, oh king, tell us the dream and we'll interpret it. And Nebuchadnezzar says, no. I want to see how good you are. I want you to tell me what the dream is, and then I want you to tell me what the interpretation is. And the wise men said, oh, king, no one can do that. I mean, that's asking an awful lot to tell us what the dream is and then interpret the dream. And so Nebuchadnezzar gets really mad. And so here's what he does. He tells his staff to kill all the wise men. They're going to murder all the wise men. Word gets back to Daniel, because Daniel wasn't in the room at the time. Word gets back to Daniel that they're going to kill all the wise men, and Daniel included. And so Daniel talks to his boss and says, hey, can you talk to the king and ask the king if he'll give me like one day just to pray about it? And so Daniel goes to prayer, and he tells his friends, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, what's the other one? Abednego. And so they begin praying about this. And wouldn't you know, God gives Daniel not only the interpretation, he gives him the dream. And so he goes back to Nebuchadnezzar and says, here's your dream, tells Nebuchadnezzar, and says, here's the interpretation. And all of a sudden, Nebuchadnezzar is so overwhelmed that Daniel was able to understand his dream and figure it out that he fell to his knees and began to worship the God that Daniel serves. Let's take a look at it. Daniel chapter 2, start in verse 46. Here's what it says. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. He was so impressed with this guy. The king said to Daniel, surely your God is the God of gods. Of course he is. He's the mighty God, right? Of course he is. And the Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery. Verse 28, love this. Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished him with many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all the what? Wise men. So Daniel became the leader of all the wise men. What do you think Daniel taught all these wise men? He taught them the prophecies of Isaiah and Micah. And he said, there's going to come a king, and he's going to be the mighty God. He's going to be the wonderful counselor. He's going to be the Prince of Peace, and you need to watch for it. He's coming. A star is going to end up in the sky, and so you need to watch for it. And for decades, for centuries that was passed on from one order of wise men to another order of wise men, from one sect of wise men to another sect of wise men. And over a period of 600 years, we get to Matthew chapter 2, and all of a sudden a star appears in the sky, and what do the magi, the wise men, do? They respond. You know why? Because they were taught that Isaiah and Micah and other prophecies, and so they responded, and they left. They came from the east, and they came in, and they sat down, and they worshiped God. I want you to notice the intentionality of God in this story that goes all the way back 600 years. It's amazing. These wise men. Verse 2 in Matthew, it says, the wise men, we have come to worship him. They were worshipers. Verse 11, on coming to the house, they bowed down and worshiped him. See, the wise men were worshipers. Right here in Matthew chapter 2, we have three individuals. Herod was hostile toward Jesus. The religious leaders were indifferent. And the wise men were worshipers. Which are you? Because as we go through Christmas, it starts there. Christmas is a time for us to evaluate and reshape our perspective of who's going to be number one in our lives. Here's the second thing. If we're going to intentionally reshape our perspectives, then here's what we do secondly. We intentionally reshape our calendars. We intentionally reshape the way we live our lives. We intentionally reshape our calendar and our lives around our value. You see, if I took your calendar and I looked at your calendar for the last 6 months, I could pretty quickly discern what you value in your life. Because what you value, you'll spend the most time at. And you could look at my calendar and you could look at it for the last 6 months and you could probably quickly discern of the things that I value in my life. And you see, if we're going to be intentional, it starts by reshaping our perspective, by reminding ourselves who's number one, and then secondly, to reshape our calendars, to reshape our lives around that. You see, there are so many of us that intentionally live accidentally. We intentionally live accidentally. In other words, we're pretty clear about our values, but we're not clear on what we want to do with our time and how we want to live out our lives. You know, several years ago, I started doing this in my own life. I thought, you know, how many hours in a week do I want to spend in studying so that I can come up here and as a church, I can learn some things and share with you the things I'm learning and we can together share, you know, and what God is teaching us. And then I put in my calendar, how many hours in a week do I want to spend with my family to make sure that my family is priority in the list of all the things, you know, God first, family second. And so I wanted to put that in there. And then I put things in there like my, you know, my health and some areas where I need some emotional catharsis. I wanted to make sure that I'm mentally well. And so there's a few things that I like to do that will help me to be healthy mentally in my life. And so I started putting those things down. And I want you to know that as I'm talking about this, I'm rethinking that. Because I want to intentionally reshape my calendar around the things that are important to me. Intentionally living accidentally. That's not the wise men. I mean, he says, they came, we have come to worship him. You know what I find interesting? When you don't want to do something, when you don't want to do something, any excuse will do. Right? You're going to be invited to probably some parties. You might get invited next year to a fundraiser. You might get invited to some work event. You might get invited to some, you know, distant family members, something or other, and you just don't want to do, you just want to go. And you know what? Any excuse will work, right? And if you find, here's what's interesting, if you find an excuse, you're like, thank you. I can call them now and say, oh, I'm so sorry. I wish I could come. I'd love to come, but I can't. Because if you don't want to do something, then any excuse will do, right? I remember my first semester senior year, I had dated a girl for 3 years in college, and that relationship fell apart my senior year. And I thought, you know, I've only dated one girl through college. Maybe I should start dating some other girls. And so I was walking across campus, and I saw this one, you know, young lady, and I thought, okay, maybe I'll ask her out. And so I kind of, you know, was very intentional about my day and making sure that we crossed paths. And when I ran into her, I was like, oh, wow, I didn't expect to see you. And so I said to her, I said, hey, are you interested in maybe, I don't know, dinner and maybe going out to a movie or something like that? And she looked at me, and these are the exact words. She says, oh, wow, thank you so much for the invitation. I wish I could. I can't. I have to wash my hair tonight. I got to tell you, I wasn't offended that she said no. I just was offended that she used such a poor excuse. Am I right? Guys, help me out here, guys. Right? I mean, when you don't want to do something, any excuse will work. On the flip side, it's also true. If you want to do something, no excuse will do. Right? If somebody gives you tickets for the OSU Michigan game and you've got a family event planned, let me tell you what you're doing. You're going to the football game. Right? When you want to do something, no excuse will do. And you realize it's the same with your spiritual life. It's the same thing with your relationships. It's the same thing in your singleness. It's the same thing in your marriage. It's the same thing in your family, in your business, with your exercise, with your financial status. If it means something to you and you want to pursue it, then you have to schedule it and calendar it in your life. Because we've often discovered that we have intentional values with accidental living. I think you would all agree with me that good intentions, well, good intentions are good for nothing, right? Until you take good intentions and you create actions in them. If you have a dream for your marriage, you better schedule so that your life takes that value and you can reshape your calendar because you have a dream for your marriage. If you have a dream for your family, then you better schedule that in your life. You better frame your life in that. I remember years ago when Kathy and I decided that sitting down for dinner was so important value for us as a family that we reframed everything. That if I got home at 8 o'clock, we had dinner and we sat down together at 8 o'clock. If the boys had something going on with their sports, we waited either after or before and we sat down together because that was a value that we had and we reshaped our lives. And I've got some reshaping to do in my own life even now because I have a dream. I have something in my life that I'm thinking through. And if you're talking about your spiritual life, if you're talking about your fitness, if you're talking about all kinds of things, we often have intentional values with accidental living. Not the wise men. They had planned this for years. And they dropped everything. They saw that star and they pursued. Don't miss this. See, today has to be important yesterday. Think about that. Today has to be important in your life yesterday. If you and I are going to be intentional in the way we live our lives, it starts with a perspective of who's number one. And secondly, we reshape our calendars, we reshape our lives so that the things that we value are the things that we do in our lives. That would honor Christmas. Because Jesus is the mighty God, we want to shape our lives around him. And we want to make sure that our calendars reflect that our lives reflect that our schedules reflect that other things don't come in and accidentally just take over. We want to be in control of our lives. What would it be like if during this Christmas season, rather than waiting for New Year's resolutions, that we made some decisions during Christmas, that we intentionally said, I'm going to reshape my perspective and I'm going to reshape my calendar because I want to make sure that in 2017 that these things happen in my life because I value my marriage, I value my singleness, I value my finances, I value my family, I value my career, I value my relationships. What would that be like? That's pretty powerful. So simple and yet so powerful. Would you bow with me for just a minute? And I'm going to ask you two questions. I'm going to ask you two simple questions. While your heads are bowed and you're just connecting with God, here's question number one. Who is number one? Question number two. What needs to change so that the things that are priority and value to you will be a part of your life? what needs to change. God, I thank you that we have this amazing opportunity to look at this Christmas story in a whole new way and to realize that you are a God that is so intentional about who we are and about sending your Son as our mighty God. And I pray that no one here in any one of our campuses, no one would leave without knowing that because you are the mighty God, you can give us power to be able to do the things that are the most important. Help us to reshape our perspective and our calendars because you are the mighty God. We thank you, Father, in Jesus' name. And the church said, amen.